What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Our Lives in Medicine. This episode features plastic and reconstructive surgeon Dr. Wilton Triggs. Dr. Triggs is a Meharry Medical School alumnus, a practitioner in Ohio, and a man who loves good movies, good food, and pop hits in the OR. In this episode, Dr. Triggs shares what life is like as a plastic surgery resident versus being a newly established attending. Dr. Triggs and I also discuss the life lessons we've learned and how these lessons helped shape us along our journeys as minorities in medicine. This is a super fun episode, and I hope you enjoy. And if you do, please share the episode with others, like us on Instagram at Our Lives in Medicine, and comment on the things you enjoyed and topics you'd like to hear in future episodes. And as always, if you need some good beats to study to or get some work done or just catch some good vibes, tune into the intro and outro and check the show notes for their artist shoutouts. I hope you enjoy and hope you have a fantastic day. Live and direct. How's everything going today, sir?
Doing well, man. Just maintaining around here.
Yes, indeed. Up in Ohio, right?
Yes, sir.
So you're living that new attending life. How's everything treating you that way?
Man, it's definitely a blessing. way better than residency, like hands down. You know, they always say, yeah, one day it's going to be worth it. And I was like, man, I don't believe it after a while. And then that attending life hits and I was like, you know what? This is way better than being a resident.
That's what keeps me going every day. Every time I wake up, I'm like, man, I don't want to do this. So I'm looking forward to the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, man, it's definitely worth it once you finally make it. It just takes a while, but it's worth it.
Okay, good to know. So you're in Ohio now. You've been an attending for a little over a year, right?
Yes, sir. I think my anniversary was August 12th. That marked 1 year of me like actually seeing patients.
Awesome. How did it feel the first time you saw one out of residency as a, quote, real doctor?
I guess because, you know, I'm in my board collection. I was just trying to like cross all my T's and dot all my I's, but it wasn't bad because, you know, just like the sheer amount of clinical exposure I had in residency, I felt like, you know, adequately prepared. But at the same time, it was just like, all right, let me look at every medication. Let me make sure I look at all the past medical history, all the past surgical history, just to, you know, make sure I don't miss, you know, something out of the way. But, you know, I wasn't like scared or anything like that. I was just trying to be like extra meticulous.
Of course, yeah. Okay, that makes sense, yeah. So, I mean, I'm the same way now as a resident. I'm terrified to make a mistake, so I'm sure you have so much more experience as being further along, but that's good to stay meticulous, I hear. So that way you don't make careless errors, so that's probably
that's
good.
That's right.
Good. And what was residency like for you? It's plastic surgery, that's 5 years, 6 years?
6 years minimum for integrated. There are some programs that are 7 years, and that's because you have a mandatory research year, usually after your third year.
Okay. And what did your kind of training look like over the years? I mean, can you just kind of give me a summary of what you learned, how you learned it?
Yeah, definitely. So I was fortunate to be accepted to an integrated program, meaning that I came in as a PGY1 in plastic surgery. The traditional route is that you would do general surgery or ENT residency, and then you would do a plastics fellowship, which usually 3 years. So the minimum route was 8 years. But now with the new integrated system, you come in as a PGY1 in plastic surgery. And then our program is kind of unique in that, like, we do like approximately 1 year of general surgery rotation. So thoracic, vascular, ENT, just like the full gamut of surgery prior to just being in plastic surgery related rotations. And so once I finished that up my first year, it was all plastics from that standpoint. I had friends that went into like medicine and anesthesia and things like that, and they seemed to love residency. I couldn't stand residency. I didn't like it at all. Every day was rough. And then, you know, that's just kind of the surgery, culture, you know, not everybody's warm and fuzzy, even in plastic surgery. Most plastic surgeons are divas anyway. So it's either their way or the highway. And so like during residency, you know, you would do a procedure with one surgeon. You're like, all right, that's fine. And then you go do the same procedure with a different plastic surgeon, and they look at you like you're crazy. Like, what are you doing? Like, I don't do it like that. So everybody has their own way. And that was probably the roughest part of plastic surgery residency, is figuring out attendings' preferences. And, it just becomes a pain. But, I came from a historically black college at Meharry Medical College in Nashville, where it was like a more family type atmosphere. Everybody was really trying to like lift you up. And then I went to a surgical subspecialty where, you know, they like cut you down to show you that they love you to some degree. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it was definitely like a culture shock. Luckily, I went to a program that was non-malignant and, you know, really preached trying to help each other out and things like that. And, I couldn't have been placed in a better position, but it was still a rough transition from medical school into plastic surgery.
Yeah, that sounds like it. But luckily, like you said, the non-malignant aspect of that particular program, that's lucky, because that's the stereotype, you know, on my end as a non-surgical person, that's just what you do, is you just suffer as a surgical resident. So it sounds like you had your fair share of suffering, but it wasn't in a malicious way, at least.
Right, exactly. I think it was more of just like getting used to the surgery culture and, you know, being a minority at the same time. So it makes a little bit difference because everybody's kind of like got their eyes on you, you know? And so I think that was probably the most challenging part of it, is like, you know, taking like, you know, pimping more personally, because, you know, if you get a question wrong, you're like, oh man, now they're gonna look at all minorities in surgery a certain way. And, you know, coming from an HBCU, so, you know, I had that stamped on me, which I was proud of, but at the same time, I wanted the school to look good. So, you know, one day they would accept more applicants and it would change their, you know, stereotype or prejudice towards HBCU medical school. So, you know, it's just a lot of pressure. I think a lot of it was just self-induced, on top of just being in a, like a surgery culture, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I find that the kind of, you, like you said, you put it on yourself. I do the same thing. I'm like, okay, I got this wrong. My, you know, fellow co-resident might have gotten this wrong too, but does it look different for me to get it wrong? I kind of wonder about that myself too. And I feel like it's not as big of a deal as I make it, but I think we kind of grow up that way, to kind of be conditioned in a way to have others expect more of us just because of our being minority status.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's interesting. So hopefully we can get through that. And it's even funnier if others aren't looking at us that way, then we're kind of just holding ourselves back.
But exactly, hopefully, exactly.
so if others are looking at us that way, that's on them, I guess, and we can just try to prove them wrong. But if they're not, hopefully we can just work our own headaches out then. So that's funny. But so what about, I wanted to ask you, like, the integrated, that the pathway that you did versus kind of the quote traditional way, how do you feel the difference in training of doing the 5 years of general surgery and then finishing out fellowship versus kind of just going straight in and doing the majority of your time in plastics?
So in talking to individuals that have done the general surgery route, I think you're stronger in taking care of sicker patients, because general surgery, you do a lot of surgical ICU training. You do a lot more abdominal based surgery. And so they have, I think, a little bit of an edge from that standpoint. But in terms of like pure plastic surgery, like skill and things like that, I think we hold a little bit of more of an edge, just because like that's all we, you know, pretty much know. And, you know, and we've had a little bit more experience, maybe not much, but a little bit more experience in doing some of the more plastic surgery procedures and have a little bit of a finer touch. Because I think coming in as a general surgeon, you pick up like, you know, quote unquote, bad habits, you know, that we would look down upon in plastic surgery, which in general surgery is just as fine. You know, I think we probably develop an aesthetic eye a little bit sooner than, you know, our general surgery trained comrades. But, you know, I think at the end though, you know, once you finish, everybody kind of, you know, if you continue to read and, you know, study and hone your skills, everybody catches up.
Okay, cool. That's good to know. I feel like if I were choosing though, I would just pick the integrated because it sounds shorter. So just like versus eight. Almost. I mean, that's a big difference. So.
Exactly. You're not like, you know, learning like how to do, you know, like a cabbage or something like that, something you're never going to do ever again, or like, you know, a femoral bypass as a vascular surgeon. We're not doing those in plastic surgery.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the frustration I'm having with residency now. Is so my plan is finish, I'm doing family medicine right now, and then I'm going to do sports medicine fellowship. And I kind of find it hard sometimes just because, you know, the hours are tough and everything else, but I'm slaving away doing stuff like managing pediatric ICU patients or dealing with like an acute pancreatitis type situation. And I'm just not going to do that in the future. So I try to just tell myself, this is something I can learn. It's something, it is really fascinating. It is just frustrating though. Like I get pulled away from my dog, or, you know, get pulled away from just being at home, or miss other things to do stuff that I'm not necessarily getting better at for my future self. But I think if you can do it for 6 years, I can do it for three. That's for sure. So
yeah, man, I'm telling you, he's like, man, what can I learn from this that I can apply later? So, you know, there's always a teaching moment in whatever you do.
Yeah. And so you said you kind of, you know, didn't love residency necessarily. Sounds like there were probably some tough days. What were things that you did to get through that?
Oh, man. At first, I really didn't know how to, like, develop that work-life balance. And so, like, I would just come home and crash. You know, I would try to read up for cases and try to study. And, you know, I think it wasn't really until my third year I kind of, like, caught my footing and was able to kind of, like, have a little bit of a better work-life balance. I started, like, reading, you know, non-medical stuff again because I like to read. So I started doing that. I started cooking a lot more. That's kind of like a de-stressor of mine. I tried to hang out with family and friends when I did have vacation, because I wasn't utilizing my vacation like I should have. Like, I would be off and I would just be sitting at home, like, you know, in front of the couch, you know, on the couch in front of the TV. And so I started like actually taking real vacations, visiting family and visiting friends, and really just learning how to be a whole person. And I think that was another thing. I didn't know how to shift from being a medical student to a resident. And as a resident, you know, you're almost like an apprentice, like an apprenticeship model. So you have to learn basically to become like an adult, like, you know, like having a job. It's not, you know, being in school anymore. You actually have to consider this a job and, you know how to cut it on and cut it off, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause I mean, I do love me some sitting around on the couch, but I got to utilize.
Me too.
Yeah. But like you said, you got to utilize, it's smart to use a day off for a couch day, but a vacation block, do something with it. Cause you'll be looking back like, man, I wish I had done something. I won't get that time back anytime soon. So yeah, that's a good point.
Oh yeah.
That's a good point. So what about your field now presently, you know, throughout residency and even now as an attending, is something that kind of just gives you the most fulfillment?
So it's funny you ask that, because I thought it would be like seeing really good results, like, especially in my post-op clinic, seeing patients that I operated on and how much they are happy with the outcome of their surgery. But I just taught a suture workshop to some medical students and some of the family medicine residents at my hospital today. And that may have been very like more fulfilling than getting good post-operative results. And so I think maybe teaching, and I'm not even like, at a very heavy academic center. We have residents and things like that in my hospital, and I agreed to sign on to that because I thought it'd be kind of fun. But I think teaching may be my which gives me the most fulfillment. I've done a lot of mentorship work outside of being a resident, and back from when I was in high school, undergrad, I've always done some like mentoring with young men and stuff like that, and I've always enjoyed it. And so I think it's the teaching aspect for me.
Interesting. Do you see yourself kind of leaning towards an academic kind of path in the future, or kind of staying mostly focused on practicing with just some as you can teaching?
Yeah, I think it would be focusing more on practicing and then just like being like maybe like an adjunct faculty where, other residents or students could like rotate on the service and just kind of like get a taste of plastic surgery. I think that would probably be more like me because I don't like to do research. I've done research, man, from high school on up, and I don't like doing it. So, in most academic centers, it's kind of like a requirement to kind of move up the chain. And so I think for me, I'm just going to focus on and try to be a really good surgeon and then just teach at the same time, and accept residents and medical students and pre-meds to come along and see what's plastic surgery is all about.
That's probably a good move too, because you get that free PubMed access and up to
Oh
date
yeah.
access through the university or whatever program, but then you don't have to do all the full responsibility. So that sounds pretty good. Yeah, that's cool. And I think you'll just from talking to you so far and on the phone the other day, you sound like you'd be a super fun preceptor to have. Like, no one's gonna mess around with you and like slack off, but at the same time you'd be fun to have, it sounds like.
Oh yeah, man, I'm all for it, man. I was telling like the clerkship director for the family medicine program today that I'm trying to like have my rotation be like highly sought after to the point where residents and medical students are trying to like bribe her to get onto the rotation. That's my goal right there.
That's a good move, man. And that says a lot about you, and that'll say a lot about your rotation, that's for sure. And maybe I'll come through too if I can,
Oh yeah, man, do it.
That'd
Be
be
happy to
sweet.
have you.
I mean, actually, that would be really cool because I think just the precision of like healing of closing wounds and things like that is really cool just to kind of see. I've seen three surgeries, like plastic surgeries, my whole life, and they were super fascinating. I got to scrub in on one and just like kind of be there. It was really cool. It was like really nice. There was like a
Yeah, man. I think a lot of people don't really grasp like the things that we do because of course the media and television just kind of shows the aesthetic side, but like the big reconstructive side, people are like blown away. So when I was in training, we would have general surgery interns rotate on the burn service, but on the burn service, it's just plastic surgery as well. So they would see us, they would be able to scrub into some of the complex reconstructions, not just burn reconstructions. And they were like, man, I didn't even know plastic surgery did this. And like we've had a couple general surgery interns like switch their whole focus, go from like, yeah, I'm gonna be a pediatric surgeon and try to become plastic surgeons just based off, that 1 month rotation as an intern,
Wow. Yeah, it's a really fascinating thing. And the guy that I rotated with, I shadowed, I was still in college actually. What he said he does is 3 days a week, he does kind of like emergency, or not emergency, but just people, like the guy I saw had part of his whole chest ripped off on a car wreck, like his just skin was just gone, and so they were doing grafts and replacing it. And he's like, so yeah, I do that 3 days a week, and then on Thursdays I just do like breast, ass, and lips is what he said. So he's like, I make my money on Thursday, but I make my fulfillment on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So that's and he's like, I don't
That's how
work
it
Friday, Saturday,
goes.
Sunday. Yeah. So I was like, man, that's a cool gig. That sounds like a good move. You just kind of pay the bills on Thursday and you actually enjoy yourself the rest of the week. So that's kind of cool.
Facts.
Yeah,
Very
big
facts.
facts. Yeah. That was cool. So
Yeah, that's awesome. It's a really cool field, and it, one of the things I've enjoyed about doing this podcast is learning more about different fields like that. For example, I didn't necessarily know that there was burns and everything. I don't know who I thought did burn repair, but it makes sense now that you said it, you know.
Right.
So that's awesome. So what are like some common cases that you see nowadays in practice, and some maybe rare ones that kind of stick out in your mind?
So I do a fair amount of like breast reconstruction and breast reduction. So I do a lot of breast work where I'm at. And surprisingly, like since, you know, the shutdown has been lifted out here in Ohio, I've been doing a lot of aesthetic cases, like, which I wouldn't really think of, because I'm in like a very rural area. I'm right on the border of Ohio and West Virginia. And so they call it kind of like the tri-state area, because Kentucky is kind of like around the border too. So, you know, this is Appalachia. So, you know, very, you know, people don't have a lot of money and things like that. But I've been doing a ton of cosmetic stuff, mostly breast augmentations and tummy tucks, mommy makeovers with breast lifts. And so I would say like majority of my practice is almost 50-50 right now. Now, if you would have asked me like maybe 6 months ago, it would probably be like 70% like reconstructive, 30% cosmetic. And, you know, it was mostly like breast reductions and a lot of skin cancer work. So excision of skin cancers with reconstructions. Rare things. I do some hand cases, because hand is a subspecialty of plastic surgery. As well as orthopedic surgery. So you can become a hand surgeon doing either one of those residencies and then doing a 1 year fellowship. And so, you know, we got a fair amount of hand training at University of South Florida's program. And so I do some hand cases. I've had like some weird like cases where this lady came in, had surgery on her hand and had this chronic open wound that was like draining like synovial fluid. And you know, it was just an absolute mess, and I took it on, which I don't know why. And she wound up having a good result. We wound up getting her closed, and it hasn't recurred. But it was almost like she had a fistula from her wrist joint to her skin, and so like that track, the like wound tracked down to like her wrist bones, where, you know, the lubricant was the synovial fluid, and so we had to close it up.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That sounds really, really fascinating, actually. So why is the hand so specialized? I mean, it's such a niche. What about the hand makes it require such a specialization?
Man, because it's such a functional part of the body. You know, the neurovascular structures, the actual mechanical motions of the hand, you know, having both intrinsic, you know, its own muscles within the area, and then extrinsic, so muscles that are connect, you know, that are in the forearm that attach to different fingers. It's just a very complex like end organ, so, you know, it just requires its own specialty and a subspecialty in a sense, just because it's just so specialized and then so utilized too. Like, you know, you break a bone in your hand and you're limited. It's like, man, I didn't know how much I actually used this hand or used my ring finger or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's just because of the functionality of the hand and how widely used it is. It just requires its own in-depth study of anatomy. And then it has its own different types of pathology too that are just, you know, specific to the hand.
That's pretty cool. So it's interesting how specialized it is with plastics and then orthopedics, and then even like my girlfriend's in physical therapy school, and you can graduate and do a specialty fellowship on just the hand physical therapy rehab. So
I rely on those guys all the time.
yeah man, that's pretty cool. I mean, the things you don't realize you need and how often you use them, kind of like when you like I broke my ribs one time in college, and I was like, man, how often I breathe is terrible. Like, breathe too much, and I laugh too much, and I cough and step off the curb too hard, and it's like agonizing pain. And or like you hurt your back and you take a sharp turn in a car, and you're like, I can't keep myself upright. So the body is it's pretty strange, but it's a beautiful mystery. That's the way I put it. And what was your route? Did you go straight from undergrad to med school into residency?
I did. I didn't take any breaks. I went from high school to college, and then it wasn't until the end of my junior year where I decided that I wanted to go to med school because I was still engineering. I switched from materials engineering to chemistry so I could take easier courses to keep my GPA up, and that set me back 1 year. Because as you move up in your major, some courses are only offered, especially the upper level courses are only offered once a year. So I did 5 years of undergrad, went straight into med school, then from med school went straight into residency. Because I kept hearing the horror stories about if you take a break, it's so hard to get back in the groove. And then I knew once I decided to become a doctor, I knew it was going to be like a long haul. So I was like, I might as well not waste any time and get to it.
Yeah, that's true. It's interesting. You started out in materials engineering. I started out in chemical, and then I like matriculated in, and I was like, man, I do not want to do this. So I dropped, I switched it, and it took me 5 years as well. But I worked for a couple years and then did grad school before med school, so that's the difference. But that 5 year plan was it's kind of worth it. It was nice just to get a little bit of extra time in that bubble of being in college that you don't realize you'll never get again when you're in it until you're out of it, and you're like, wait, I'll never get to live like that again, will I?
Exactly. And so I was just taking like random classes to stay full time so I could keep my scholarship. So I had a blast, man. That extra year, I wasn't doing, I mean, I only had like maybe two classes. So like I would go to lab and then go to like whatever chemistry class I was, like upper level chemistry class. And then I took a lot of recording music classes to stay full time. So man, it was the dream, man. I was only taking 12 hours. I was partying and just going to class. That was it. It wasn't
Yeah.
working. It was a dream, man.
That's true. That sounds pretty legit right there. I could go for a life like that right now, but I think I'm past that, unfortunately, never get that fire back.
I know, right?
It's sad, but it's like I try to tell younger people, like I have a cousin who's about to he just graduated high school, and I'm like, man, you gotta do it, you gotta go. You don't understand. Like, forget the importance for your future. That's cool and all, but like, you just will never experience anything like having no responsibility, only being around young people all the time, and just doing whatever you want. You have your own schedule, and everything's paid for already. So you just kind of live your life. You'll never get that again, trust me. So
Right.
I'm gonna try to keep working on him.
Exactly. I'm telling you, it's a real deal.
Yeah, that's a shame. So we got to get him in there. But I wanted to ask too, what about interviewing for plastic surgery? What are the interviews like?
So, different programs usually have you do something like a little weird. When I interviewed in Kentucky, they have you draw like a portrait of yourself. And you have to like, explain the drawing or whatever.
What?
I mean, it's crazy. So I think I forgot where it was. Was it Loma Linda? You have to carve an ear out of soap.
Oh, what?
Yeah, it's some crazy stuff. I'm trying to think what was another one. I know 1 year we had, when I was the chief resident, we had applicants rap about themselves. So,
Ooh,
it's
that's
just all kinds
awkward.
of, it's just like, I think the whole premise is being able to think on your feet and being able to like kind of explain yourself. And usually, and then the plastic surgery realm, especially in residency, a lot of these guys are like super gregarious, very well accomplished. I remember, man, being on the interview trail, a guy that was a Navy SEAL. A jazz musician and a recorder that decided to go back to school and had these like astronomical board scores, and people that had all this like real life experience started like companies and got patents, published books, and like there's me, like all I did was go to school and that was it. And
Yeah.
so it's just like trying to figure out people or seeing how people do under pressure. And just seeing like how they overcome. But I thought the interviews were all like pretty straightforward. I mean, I didn't feel like intimidated from the interviewers or like I didn't belong or anything like that. So they were pretty nice, pretty chill, laid back interviews. Not like you're not getting pimped or anything like that from what I remember, unless I just blocked it out. But it was pretty straightforward stuff, yeah.
That sounds pretty awesome. It sounds better than just like walk in, tell me about yourself. Okay, get out. That's having something active like that is pretty fun. I mean, it's probably nerve wracking for the right person, but that it sounds pretty fun.
Right. It was, man. It definitely was. It is a little nerve wracking because you're kind of like, man, why in the world did I do this? Oh man, did my ear look okay? Or they judged me on my ear and stuff like that? And so, you know, you get a little racked like that, but nothing major.
Yeah, that's funny. And then so now that you're an attending, let's say you were hiring someone fresh out of residency or a new applicant, what would be like the ideal candidate in your eyes?
I think in plastic surgery, because we're basically like consultants, we get consulted by other surgeons and also medical doctors. So you have to be a team player. So, you know, I'm looking for a team player, positive attitude, willing to like teach, cause, you know, talking with other consultants, you can let them know like, hey, you know, if you see this, go ahead and send them to me. If you see that, go ahead and work them like that. Someone is willing to, you know, bring that spirit of teamwork, I think is probably the biggest attribute. Of course, somebody with, you know, good skills in the operating room, just real cordial. You don't really want to work with somebody that's really crass or just really like have a bad attitude. Cause I'm telling you, I've been on rotations, like easy rotations with like horrible people and it was miserable. And then I've been on super hard rotations with good people and it was like the best time ever.
Mm.
And that's kind of the, you know, the atmosphere, the culture I would want to build. So I would just like to have like a good, like teamwork, family friendly, culture. To where we do the work, we try to do the best for the patients, and we go home to our families. So that would be the kind of like the attributes I'm looking for.
Got you. Yeah, that sounds like that would be perfect for any field, really. But definitely something like plastics. I mean, that's a very personable field. People are coming to you for sometimes cosmetic things, and then sometimes in an emergency, and you got to console them or, you know, reassure them that everything's going to be good. So that, you need someone with that personality. That's a good point.
Exactly.
So if you weren't in medicine, what do you think you'd be doing?
If I wasn't in medicine, I think I would be a chef. Like really? I love food. I'm a big foodie. I like to go out to eat. Like that's my thing. Like I like to go to restaurants and try out new food. I watch a lot of Food Channel. I've been doing it since like sophomore, junior year of high school. And I think I would go to culinary school and learn how to like manage restaurants. And I don't know if I would necessarily maybe cook in it, but I would definitely like try to own restaurants, be a restaurateur, and also like have a culinary degree to be able to cook.
That'd be pretty awesome. What kind of food do you think you would make?
Probably like just kind of like American based food, like pretty modern type stuff, like taking like the classics, like American classics, and making them like more like gourmet, or you know, kind of like more appeasing to the eye, things like that, like a play on comfort food and making it like fancy.
Interesting. Okay, well, if you ever open up a restaurant, let me know. I'll be there. That sounds amazing.
Oh yeah. For sure, man. Go ahead and get you the VIP table and everything.
Oh yeah, that sounds real good. Get the good sauce on the table. I'll be ready.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That sounds good. Yeah, you know, when I was in Florida for about 6 years, South Florida, I was like Miami and Fort Lauderdale for working and then in medical school. And that was one thing, like the Latin food was amazing, obviously, but it was hard to find some like good soul food. And every time I came home, mm-hmm. I was like, I need some good, like, you know, collard greens, some sweet potatoes, you know, the candied yams, everything like that. It was tough. There's a place back in Raleigh, cause I went to NC State, and there's a place back in Raleigh. It was a soul food buffet. Man, I tell you. It was amazing. Larry's buffet, so good. Like I have like dreams about it sometimes. So if you ever open up a restaurant, man, you want to compete with Larry's, let me know. I'll be there to taste test.
Oh, for sure, bro. I'm all in.
That sounds awesome. So so I wanted to ask another question. We kind of touched on this earlier, but kind of talking about, you know, outreach to younger Black men and just, you know, ourselves in medicine as minorities. What do you feel your role is as a Black man in medicine?
I think my role is mainly to increase the diversity in medicine. So helping other young Black men to get into medicine, and not necessarily plastic surgery, but just in medicine. period, in other professional fields. Like that's what I'm so big in mentorship. Studies have shown that minorities do better and have better outcomes when going to a person of color in the medical field. I mean, there was just a study that last week that CNN was hyping up about the lower death rate in women of color that have a doctor of color. And so I think for me, that is like what my main priority is. I think secondary, of course, I want to increase the number of Black plastic surgeons, but I'm more interested in getting young males into professional atmospheres versus, you know, businessmen, attorneys, contractors, and doctors. And then from there, you know, of course, try to like bring that pipeline into my own specialty. I think from another standpoint, I think just by increasing that diversity, that would definitely, you know, increase outcomes. But I think it'll show people that, you know, we're just as capable of providing good care. So
that's interesting about the minority outcomes. That I didn't know about that one. What do you think about that? Why do you think that might be the case?
I think because, you know, there is some systemic bias. I wouldn't say racism, but bias, because there's been studies to show that white doctors have like kind of ignored pain complaints from African-American patients, thinking that they can tolerate pain more than versus a Caucasian patient. I think understanding the cultural background of someone helps you in making diagnosis and knowing that, oh, well, this person's pain seeking versus no, there's something wrong. You know, being able to pick up like small little details in history that could affect that patient's health and overall status. So I think like someone's going to feel more comfortable with someone of color, and they're going to open up more, and they're going to pick up more in the medical history that's going to help them with treatment, you know, diagnosing and treatment. So I think it's more of like a comfort level on top of being able to read that person a little bit better to take care of them. And sometimes you're able to talk to them on a certain level to where they understand the importance of taking their medicine, or understand the importance of going to physical therapy and stuff like that. That's going to, you know, give them a better outcome.
Interesting. Yeah. That sounds like a good reason to me. And also, yeah, I didn't mean to just kind of breeze past your answer to that big question. I really appreciate the response to kind of your role as well, how you feel about being a Black man practicing medicine. I didn't mean to just buzz over that, but that was also kind of an interesting point you brought up, so I wanted to discuss that as well. So yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think it's fascinating the differences in just people in general, how it's everyone's different, but it doesn't matter. It's because we're different in our core, not because of our skin tone, you know. But I think our skin color can kind of make us different because of our experiences. So I totally agree that we might be looking out for different things. We might have a more personal connection to that culture, and yeah, that might help improve our outcomes, and getting more of us in the field will help the outcomes as well. That'd be great. I would love that.
For sure.
Absolutely. So, well, I've been grilling you on medical stuff. Let me ask you some non-medical stuff about you and just kind of get to know you a little bit on a non-medical level. So my first question would be, how has your music taste changed since you were like in high school versus now?
Oh man. So I've always been a huge hip hop rap fan, like a lot of hardcore stuff, like trap music. I still consider myself a trap music connoisseur, but you know, I can't really be playing that in the OR as much because, you know, I'm not trying to offend anybody. You know, I want people to feel comfortable, you know, working with me, you know. And so like now I just put on like today's hits on Pandora, which is mostly pop. And so like I listen to like a lot of pop music, you know. And so I catch myself like humming and singing that stuff on my way home, and I'm like, what is going on here? I would say I've become more of a pop fan over time. And really it started in residency when I was able to start running my own OR and didn't want to really offend anybody. And so, yeah, man, I've been getting bigger into pop music.
That's funny. But you still got the trap background, though, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You can't listen to the pop stuff on the way to the gym, but it's good for the OR. No. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
That's true. That's really funny. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the same way. I grew up Motown, all, you know, the Southern, the soul hits from my parents and like a lot of jazz, but then kind of discovered rap on my own. And that kind of helped me through a lot, you know, just helped me grow. You know, without that, I would have never had my G-Unit phase or I thought I was tough, you know, I would have never had that and learned a lot of valuable lessons with a belt from my mom, you know. So I think you know, without rap music I would have never got those lessons, so I think that's good.
Right. Facts.
Yeah, so that's funny. You know, unfortunately rap doesn't always teach everyone those valuable lessons, but I learned them firsthand, that's for sure. So that's good. So what about top five movies, like top three, top five movies that you could just watch on repeat?
Shawshank Redemption.
Ooh.
The Temptations, Five Heartbeats. What else? This is gonna sound crazy, but Hitch. Because every time I'm like flipping channels, you go by TBS, they're playing Hitch, and I was just like, oh, I'll start watching this. Next thing you know, I'm watching the whole movie.
It's a good movie. That is a really good movie.
Yeah, you know, I'm a sucker for a good, like, I like happy endings, man. So I may be a sap, but I like a good happy ending.
Yeah, for sure.
And then I'm like really big into mafia movies, so. Goodfellas is definitely one of my favorite movies too, for sure.
I think Goodfellas is maybe one of my favorite mafia movies, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that one's just so good. Now, don't get me wrong, The Godfather, of course, is good. And like, there's a couple other ones. But even like The Irishman, that was really good. But the Goodfellas,
man. Oh, The Irishman was good. You know, Casino was bomb. I really
Casino's really good. Yeah. That one's good too.
With Donnie Brasco, that's kind of what got me into mafia movies. My my homeboy, my best friend in med school, he's an anesthesiologist out in Detroit. But, you know, we were studying for step one, and he was like, man, you never seen Donnie Brasco? I was like, who is that? And, like, he was one that really got me into the mafia movies. And so, like, it was a Saturday. We had been studying all morning. It was, like, 2 o'clock. So we went and picked up some wings, came back to his crib, and put it on, man, I was locked in.
God, that's a crazy good movie. I mean, it's got Al Pacino, it's got Johnny Depp, like, you know, his, like, how different he looks. Mm-hmm. It's a crazy good movie.
You can't even tell, like, it's crazy.
Yeah, and then what's that other mafia movie with Johnny Depp? He's like the, what is it? It's like Public Enemies?
I don't even think I've seen that one.
Oh, that one's good, man. That one's real good. He's like just old school Tommy gun leaning out the window, blasting people type of thing. That's Public Enemies.
Yeah. Hoodlum. I liked Hoodlum too. You
know, I haven't seen that one.
It's like with Lawrence Fishburne, and he's like Bumpy Johnson, and then Lucky Luciano. It's kind of like got ties to like the black gangsters and the mafia. So Hoodlum is a good one too. It's a pretty long movie, but I love long movies because it makes me feel like I got my money's worth.
Yeah, that's true. I'll have to check that one out. I'll look that one up. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, man, Hoodlum is a good one. I might watch that tonight. I only got clinic tomorrow, so yeah, I can stay up a little late.
That's good. Yeah, that there's a new series on Netflix I'm definitely going to check out as soon as I get a little bit of time. And it's called, I forget what it's called. It's like Evil City or something like that. It's basically like how the mafia took over. I think it's New York. It looks fantastic. It's like a docu-series, like 6 episodes.
No. All right. That's another one I got to check
out.
Yeah.
It's something to that effect. You'll see it on Netflix. It's a mafia movie, and it looks awesome. It's like a docu-series, and they kind of just take you through the coming up of like the 6 families or the 5 families or whatever. I'm all about that. So
yeah, I got to check that out. I like origin type docu-series. That sounds good.
Yeah, so that's cool. That's the stuff right there. So, well, I mean, you know, we got a lot in common already, so that's funny. But
yeah,
one of my favorite questions is, what did you get in trouble for as a kid?
Oh man, so I was kind of like a goody two shoes, man. Like I stayed away from trouble, but I do remember one time my parents weren't home, and you know, it's rural Alabama. We were supposed to be at my cousin's house, like literally like down the block, or not really like a city block, but a big country mile. And so, but we like, I don't know why we came back home. It was like me, my cousins, we were all playing outside, and we knocked over my dad's grill, and we tried to like fix it, and I don't know if we just left it broke like that. So, wind up going back to my cousin's house and hanging out, and then one of my other cousins comes and get me. He's like, "Hey, your dad home. He wants you to come home." I got home, and the whole neighborhood got a whooping. Me too. And I was like, "What in the world?" Eric had to take it on the chin, man. I was like, I didn't even break the grill, but there was the whole premise of like, y'all shouldn't have been here, and if you had been doing what you're supposed to do, the grill wouldn't have got broken down, and then you're just guilty by association. So I still remember that.
That is pretty funny then. The fact that everyone got one too
The
makes it even
whole neighborhood.
funnier.
I remember like walking up, like do to do, and seeing like my cousins and stuff going home crying and stuff. I'm like, what in the world happened out here? It's like a massacre. It's terrible,
Just lining up, getting their licks, man.
bruh. Oh
That's
God,
so
it's
funny.
terrible.
That's so funny. I was laughing the other day with my cousins. I have a pretty big family too, and we were laughing about one of my cousins when we were all young. My grandma had him. She had him her right hand and holding his left hand, and she was tearing his butt up. She's walking forward, he's facing away, and he's trying to jump away from her. So he's jumping, and every time she would jump, she would just follow him with her hand. As soon as he lands, wop wop again, and he would jump, and she would just fall. I mean, she wore him out, and we were all like, "Damn, man, I ain't mad." We didn't act up for like the rest of the week, man. We were there for like the whole summer, and no one acted up for like a couple of days because we were like, "I'm not catching what he got, that's for sure." So it's I definitely don't miss those days. I mean, I forget when I outgrew him getting, spanked, but I was like, man, I just gotta hurry up and get there, 'cause I kept getting him. I didn't learn any lessons, so I gotta get out of here. It's tough, man. It's tough. That's tough. So, but yeah, I mean, it's growing up in Alabama, what was that like?
Alabama's cool, man. Everybody like speaks to you is that whole Southern hospitality is a real thing. Like, people that you wouldn't expect to talk to you, like say hello and excuse me and stuff like that. And so, man, when I moved to Tampa, it was like quite the opposite, because Tampa has a lot of like northeastern transplants. So a lot of people from New Jersey, New York, the East Coast, and people aren't as friendly. But I loved it, man. I loved growing up in Alabama. I lived in a small town, and then we moved into the city, which it's not really like a crazy city. It is kind of now because it's like on a boom, but you kind of know everybody. The black community is I think it's maybe 30 to 40% of Huntsville, so it has a fair amount. And so people like know people, and I had no problem with it. It was great.
Do you get to go back very often, or is it kind of you're too busy?
Now, like, when I was in residency, not as much, but now I go pretty routinely, go back, check on my mom's side of the family. So, yeah.
Okay, sweet. That's good. I'm glad you get to go home at least. And
Yeah.
there's no place like home, man. When I was in Florida, I was always like, I just got to get back. And I'm glad to be home for no in North Carolina for residency too. So it's nice.
Yeah.
I feel that. So. Well, we've been talking for 45 minutes. How about I hit you with the wrap-up questions, and I'll let you get to the mafia movies.
All right, sounds good.
All right, cool. So I like to ask these four questions to every guest, and you can just take as long as you want or whatever, and flush them out, and we'll go from there. So the first question is, has practicing medicine been what you expected?
It's actually been better. So, like I said, man, I did not have like a really good residency experience. But when I'm calling like the shots now and kind of picking and choosing what I want to do, it's a lot more. I like that a lot more than when I was in residency, where it's like an attending looking over your shoulder and stuff like that. Like, I don't like that, or I don't like this. So it's actually been a lot better. I already knew that paperwork was going to be a pain, so dealing with like insurance company denials and stuff like that. you know, it doesn't, you know, it's a pain, but it was like something I was already prepared for because I already knew about it. Because in our program, we handled like all that kind of stuff. So it's been definitely way better than I expected.
Good. That's a good. I'm glad to hear that. That's good.
Yeah.
And then, in your opinion, what are keys to success in medicine?
I think don't compromise your integrity. I think the moment you start like cutting corners or compromising, you know, you're gonna get yourself like in trouble, like ethically, and then you're gonna compromise patient care. So I think if you just maintain your integrity, that's first and foremost. Document everything, of course, you know, CYA, you know, you gotta just make sure you document appropriately and, you know, ethically. And just be very detail oriented. And I think never lose your bedside manner. You got that empathy is hard to keep, you know, going through med school, going through training, and dealing with, you know, stressful situations. I think you start to lose a lot of empathy. You lose that humanistic side that brought you into medicine, or you kind of like, you know, wanted to bring out in medicine. So I think if you can kind of try to focus on, you know, this person, you know, doesn't know any better. You know, this person doesn't understand what you know about this disease process. So instead of like, you know, coming off kind of crass to them about their eating habits or their smoking habits, you got to understand why they're doing it and, you know, just really try to educate them on, okay, this is why it's important to quit this. This is why it's important for you to take this medicine instead of just writing them off. I think you gotta have to like really show empathy. I think you have to make it a point to treat them as if they were like your mom or dad to try to keep that empathy. And your one, it's going to help you from a medical legal standpoint because people don't sue doctors they like even if they do mess up. And two, it's just going to make you a better doctor all the way around.
Absolutely. Awesome. And yeah, that's really cool advice actually. And it's hard sometimes, like you said, but it is, that's why the majority of people got into it, you know. So it's a shame to get into it for that reason and then practice in it without that purpose. So that's a good point.
Exactly.
So what about now? You know, you're a ballin' attending now, you know, no more people telling you what to do. You know, what about looking back to people maybe in residency or medical school or even pre-meds? What would be your advice to them as they kind of continue their pursuit?
Kind of like the same things. I think I had like I've been this on this whole kick maybe for the past like 9 months to a year about like feeling the vibe or feeling the energy of like a situation. And if things don't feel right, it's probably not right. And even though you're not like really able to like communicate it, I think that's really important that you know, if you're in a situation and things don't seem kosher, then you know, step away or you know, there's a reason why. Don't continue into whatever you're doing that's causing you to feel a certain type of way. So that is the main thing I would point to. So if you think like a relationship with a patient doesn't feel right or with a nurse or with another attending, then you know, you need to reevaluate. So that would be my added piece of advice is like if it doesn't feel right, it's probably not right, so stay away from it.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. And that goes for anything, even outside of medicine, I feel like.
Oh
So,
yeah, for
yeah.
sure. Definitely. Yeah.
And then the last question is, if you woke up tomorrow and you were 10 years old and you had to do everything over again to get back to where you are today, would you do it all over again?
Whew, man. That's a question. Man, knowing what I know now and the people that I've met, I think I would. I mean, medicine's hard, man. I missed out on a lot of family time, you know, hanging out with friends and things like that. And so I think I've always been of the mindset of, man, if I had to do this again, I would, you know, do something different. But like just the experiences I've had and like how much it's like made me, I feel like a better person or more well-rounded person. I think I would do it all over again.
All right. That means, yeah, you're going to residency again and everything. But
oh,
now that you're on the now that you're on the other side, though, it sounds like it's worth it. So, yeah.
Exactly. Now, if you asked me this a year ago, I said no.
Like, done. Never again.
Never again. I'm telling you.
I'm going to become a loan shark, and that's it.
So, there we go.
Or I'm going to join the mafia. That's what I'm going to do.
Exactly.
They can make a movie about me.
Omerta.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's it. So, no, that's good, though. I mean, I'm glad that even with how stressful everything went, that, you know, now that you're on the other side, you can see that it was worth it and you're willing to keep stay the course. That's all. That's great. That's great. I'm hoping to feel the same way when I graduate. So that's hopefully the plan.
Well, when you're kind of like calling the shots, and definitely when you get that first paycheck, you're like, finally, I have arrived.
So, yeah, like you said, I mean, it's worth it. It's a long road, but it definitely has its ups and downs, but I'm happy where I am now relatively. And I'm sure as I progress forward to the goal, it'll be better and better. So,
yeah, for sure.
Well, Dr. Triggs, I really appreciate your time, and it was awesome talking with you and getting to know you, and thanks so much for being a guest. I really appreciate it.
Hey, man, it's no problem. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, Dr. Triggs, thank you again. I really appreciate your time, and have a great one. That was Dr. Wilton Triggs, plastic surgeon in Ohio. Thank you so much for tuning in. And to those in the game and those on their way up, keep grinding and don't let anyone take your dream away from you.
Go on.